More than one quarter of the world's coral reefs are damaged beyond repair, with another two-thirds under serious threat. Mining, dredging and pollution are just a few of the threats posed to our reefs, which are home to some of the most illustrious and biologically diverse ecosystems on the planet. But a new lead in research shows that some coral reefs are quickly adapting to the pressure of climate change. David Sudgett from the Climate Change Cluster at the University of Technology Sydney is leading the research and says these reefs could help find a way to save hundreds of other ecosystems from extinction. He told Jake Morecambe that one such reef is closer than we think.
When we think of coral reefs in Australia, our association is the Great Barrier Reef, but what people don't know is that we have coral reefs right in our backyard in Sydney Harbour. We first came across this where we were working with the guys at the local aquarium, and they had some corals in their tank that we didn't recognise, and we said, well, where did you get that coral from? And they said, well, it's right on our doorstep here in the harbour, and we kind of thought, well, okay, let's go check it out. When we went in there, the reef there is quite incredible. It's about one dominant species, maybe two or three other less dominant species, but you find these mats of corals just along the harbour. Now, the reason people haven't really seen them before is they're not as colourful or as ornate as the kind of corals you find in the tropics. They're kind of flat, veneering, brown, so they're not as interesting or exciting visually to look at. But nonetheless, they're incredibly important because it tells us corals can survive exceptionally well this far south.
Is that where a problem sort of lies, in that we're sort of prioritising prettier coral reefs for conservation as opposed to these ones which are in murkier waters, so we think that they're less important?
Absolutely. It's a really critical point. And if you think about how conservation and management operates, it operates on a shoestring budget. Now, for a long period of time, management and resources have been aimed at preserving the ornate, pretty reefs that are most susceptible to stress. There's kind of some logic in doing that. But actually, the argument now is, well, maybe we should conserve those corals that we know are probably better off at dealing with climate change stresses. But those typically are the less pretty, boulder-like corals, and kind of the same species we find in the harbour.
One of the things in your research is you were trying to pinpoint which ones were the weak corals and which ones were the strong corals. Are the ones that are able to deal with climate change more readily necessarily the strong corals?
That's a good question. I suppose the coral species that are most tolerant to climate stresses, they're the bolder corals, the less pretty corals. So what we do is we'll screen the population for certain physiological traits, like which are the fastest growers, which are the slowest growers, and use their energy for other processes like physiological maintenance against stresses. And if we can find out the strong corals under climate change and the weak corals, it then gives us some idea, first of all, the winners in the future and how our reefs might look, and that's really important for predictive management. And secondly, if we want to divert our resources for management, well, perhaps we can target certain taxa. And that actually carries through to some of the molecular work now. Again, if we want to sequence the genome of a species, it's pretty expensive stuff. Corals have very large genomes. But again, if we can make a conscious decision about which species might be the most robust in the future, then maybe we can target the investment into those particular species.
And as you were writing too, this is ever more important, especially with El Niño. What does that threaten?
Well, that threatens reefs worldwide. So we've already seen coral bleaching in the Pacific this year. All evidence at the moment suggests that the current El Niño will be bigger than the El Niño in 1998. Now, why everyone benchmarks to 1998? Is that is the most extreme El Niño on record, where 60 countries worldwide experienced coral bleaching. In fact, if we just look at the Great Barrier Reef, over 50% of all corals bleached, which basically means it's losing its pigments and its algae that it uses to acquire energy by photosynthesizing. Now, when there's a climate anomaly, the heat stress that accompanies that encourages photosynthesis to go into overdrive and produce lots of free radicals. And what happens, the coral just can't tolerate those toxins, and eventually the host tissue detaches from the skeleton, just leaving the bare coral. There was some element of recovery subsequent to that, but since 1998, stress has become so much more extreme on the Great Barrier Reef. We have much more mining and dredging and agricultural activity, that this is going to slow the recovery and probably increase mortality. So we're starting to understand that this kind of Godzilla El Niño, as it's been coined, is probably going to have a very big effect this summer. we can potentially do something about it if we understand the local stresses.
How will you then present this research forward in the hope to provide a more sustainable future for our reefs?
Well, as scientists, our best approach is simply to put the evidence forward. So we have both experiments and long-term observations to demonstrate what are the conditions required to enable the reefs to thrive and provide us the resources that potentially we want to exploit and do so in a sustainable way. And it's at that point the governments have to act and decide how they want to invest resources and adjust economies of scale so that it's win-win for everyone.
Associate Professor David Sudgett, head of the Coral Ecophysiology Processes Group in the Climate Change Cluster, speaking with Jake Morecambe.